Pushkin. Hi, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas. And we're going on a series of double dates to find out
what makes a marriage last. I don't often find myself hanging out with a pair of heavy-hitting lawyers, just for fun. But when Marlo and I had the chance to sit down with David and Mary Boies, that's exactly what it was.
They're an incredible couple. I mean, when David met Mary, she was the assistant director for the domestic policy staff under President Jimmy Carter.
And David was chief counsel for Ted Kennedy.
Well, you don't get more power couple than that.
Certainly not. When we settled down to chat with them, we were eager to know about their first meeting. Were they cautious lawyers, or was the attraction immediate?
It took me about 12 seconds. he wasn't married.
Always good.
He was really smart. Mm-hmm. He was very good looking. And he had a little money in his pocket. he was a nice guy.
Mother would have liked it.
So it took me 12 seconds. Took him a while.
No, it didn't take me very long.
But what did you think? I mean, did you?
I thought she was really sexy.
See, there you go.
And, which at that stage was very high priority for me. And very smart.
Yeah.
And I asked her out the next time I was in Washington.
Uh-huh.
But we were negotiating at that time because we were working on airline deregulation. And Kennedy had a bill that was very radical. President Carter supported a bill that was more moderate. And so we had negotiating sessions with me and 6 or 8 other people from the administration, different agencies, and then him. And I said to my colleagues, we are not negotiating with this man. And they said, well, why? I said, no offense, but he's 100 times smarter than all of us put together. That was 1977?
1977.
And you got married in 82?
82.
Wow.
And
that was a long time you waited.
Well, he'd been married twice.
Yes.
And people were warning me, you know, this guy marries, but he doesn't really stay with people. And that was fine with me because I'd already been married.
Right.
I sort of got that out of my system.
Uh-huh.
But once I moved to New York, I thought, I'm not going to live in New York and not be married. Uh-huh. So are we getting married or am I moving back to Washington?
That's good.
I don't remember it quite that way.
How do you remember it?
I don't remember. I remember me asking you, and I don't remember you bringing it up to me, sweetheart. But you might have.
What gave you the optimism to get married a third time?
Oh, I was just too much in love not to.
And were you a little nervous about marrying a guy who'd been married twice before?
Absolutely. I figured, well, we won't have children, and it'll be fun as long as it lasts, and then I'll do something else.
Why did you think you wouldn't have children?
Because he already had 4.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that if we had children, then I'd be really
in
this marriage.
And how old were you this time?
32.
That's a good age to get married.
It was a wonderful age to get married.
Yeah,
and the first child came when I was 33, and then the second when I was 35. And it was just good timing.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't anxious to get married. I wasn't looking to get married,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, every time I saw him, I went weak in the knees, and I thought, that's a good sign.
That's a very good sign.
And it's still true.
Yeah, that's a great sign.
Well, I have a mental picture of your evenings together. First of all, you both have your computers, and I would think that in the evening hours, you have a hard time not being on them.
Here's a typical night. We go out to dinner a lot.
Yeah.
And we go out just the two of us a lot when we can. And we call them dates.
Yeah,
they are dates.
Right, yeah.
And a typical dinner starts with, sweetheart, did you see what the Supreme Court did this morning? Can you believe that? Or, what do you think of this opinion?
Yeah.
Our very first real date We talked about the IBM antitrust case for 2.5 hours.
Well, of course you would.
And I was fascinated.
Well, this was after she appeared like 90 minutes late because there had been some crisis in the White House and she had had to stay and work on it, which she thought was entirely understandable because she was working for the President of the United States. I thought if it was an efficient President of the United States, he would have had his work done.
Right.
But so it was, we did get to the IBM antitrust case, but only after she arrived and we went through what she'd been doing.
That's true.
But you waited 90 minutes.
I did. No, she was definitely worth waiting for.
No cell phones in those days.
Yeah, that's right. There was no,
Did you call the maitre d'? That's what I used to
do. No, I didn't, because I was on the phone constantly. I was asked to get something done, and it was not something that could be done out of the White House.
Right.
And it was a Friday night, and it was getting later and later and later. And I was just on two lines, three lines. It was fun and wonderful and crazy. And I'd look at the watch and say, oh, I wonder if he's still there.
That's amazing. That's like Phil gave a party in Chicago for me for all the people in Chicago that he worked with and that he knew, and the movie critic and the TV critic and the newspaper people.
Nice.
I was very excited about it. And I was producing a movie that I was also starring in, and I was supposed to begin the music score on Tuesday. The composer had a heart attack. And so my co-producer said, you can't go away this weekend. We're going to have to write an entire score by Tuesday. So I call Phil and I say, I'm so thrilled that you're giving this party for me. But I have sort of bad news. I can't come. He goes, you're kidding, right? Anyway, so he gave these 200 people, came to his house. He had a tent, he had a band, he had all these people. And there was no Marlo.
And
I love that.
I know.
Love that.
And I really thought, this is it. This guy's going to dump me tomorrow. So these things happen to me when you're dealing with people who are in responsible jobs. You can't walk out on the president.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah,
I can't walk out on a movie that I have to deliver to the network.
Right.
And these men who marry us or who stay in love with us through that, they have to be the kind of men who can handle that,
right,
who can take that.
I think it's important. I mean, because I think, part of what, makes relationships work is each of you being interested in the other and interested in what the other is doing and how to help the other.
Right.
You do talk about your shop.
About
your shop.
Yeah, we do.
Yes,
I mean,
we
talk about a lot of other things, but we do talk about it because, if you've got a difficult case, difficult legal problem or factual problem, it's good to just be able to talk it through with somebody who's A, knows what you're doing, and B, is smart, and three, is sort of thoughtful, and
four is on your side.
And finally is patient, because the more you get into something that's really complicated, the deeper you get into it, the fewer and fewer people are interested in that level of detail.
Mm-hmm.
If I tell somebody, if I've got a very interesting case where I'm trying to sue health insurers for price fixing or antitrust violations, that's sort of interesting to people because they want to improve the healthcare system and big companies getting together and conspiring is kind of interesting. But then you begin to get into the second and third and fourth and fifth and sixth level of detail, and you begin talking about how many, insureds there are in this county in Alabama. And nobody, unless it's your spouse, is going to be interested in that.
All right.
Right.
And what do you have to prove under Section 2 of the Clayton Act in order to win this?
But you understand what he's talking about.
Yeah, she does.
And I'm fascinated by it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about law, we talk about politics, we talk a lot about history, we debate.
History.
Did Eisenhower do the right thing here?
Yes.
It's fun. But when our children were growing up, they sometimes thought we were arguing.
Oh, right.
Because they didn't understand what we were talking about.
Because we were talking intensely and, you know.
Right. Well, you were debating.
Yeah,
we were
exactly. You know,
debating is a little bit of
arguing. Because we don't entirely agree on everything.
Yeah.
And that's good, too.
Yeah. Were you married to a lawyer before?
No, I was married to a college professor.
And what, were you ever married to a lawyer?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Both my former wives were.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. There's a theme.
Right. I mean, I think it's important that you have different interests, but it's also important that you share some interests.
Right.
You know,
it's
important that they understand what you're doing, that you're with somebody.
Your interests are so common.
Yeah, yeah.
In many ways, you're chewing up time that might otherwise be devoted to differences that cause anger. And
Right.
Yeah.
In other words, it saves you from what other couples might devote to conflict.
Yeah.
And that's true, although often we have friendly disagreements. Hmm. You know, I think the court went too far on this. Or when Clarence Thomas said X, I didn't see any basis for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would say, well, you've got to look at it this way. And
right.
So, yes, we avoid topics of conflict, but we have lively disagreements.
Right.
How do lawyers fight? That's interesting.
Well, I mean, I think actually one thing, I haven't really thought about this before, but I think maybe one thing that helps in times of conflict is being lawyers, because as lawyers, you understand that there are different points of view. You're always dealing with somebody who has a different point of view. And you understand that somebody who is your adversary is not your enemy. But I think more important is that if you keep in context disputes, disagreements, if you get angry, and you keep that in the context of the overall relationship, you're not likely to pout or go off or stay angry very long, because you understand that it's such a tiny part of your relationship and such a small part of your time together.
Right.
As a couple, they've had a lot of joy, but no shortage of tragedy either.
David, in particular, has had his share of heartbreak.
I've lost two children.
Oh, no.
Yeah, my daughter had lung cancer. My son had this aneurysm. She was 48, and he was 50.
That's terrible.
Yes.
My job was to be there. There's nothing you can say.
Yeah.
You're never the same when you lose a child.
No.
So when we first heard that Jonathan was in a bad way, you said, I can't do this again.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you can and we will. Yeah. We must. And
right.
So it.
Mm-hmm.
And we are.
Yep.
That's what marriage is kind of for.
Yep.
To be the cushion of life.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
When my father died, I loved him so much. He was my best friend ever. You know, I was a real daddy's girl.
Mm-hmm.
And when he died, I just grieved something terrible, mm-hmm. You know. I went to a shrink that I had gone to years before, and I said, "Is this sick that I'm crying so much? Mm-hmm. What is, you know?" He said, "No, this is what life is."
Yeah.
He said, "And this is why some people don't commit to love."
Yeah.
Because they know at the end somewhere
something's going to happen.
The loss
can happen, right?
Yep.
And Phil just brought me through it and had my mom come and live with us for 3 months. I mean, and she was a mess and I was a mess. He just entertained us every night. He invited people. He took us out. I mean, it was just, my mother and I were both basket cases. But he really came through. He really, and that's the cushion.
Oh, a good Irish man, a good Irish lad.
Yeah.
We'll have more after a quick break. We're back to our conversation with David and Mary Boies. They're both so smart, it's hard to believe that David was dropping out after high school.
I mean, I don't know what would happen if my first wife had not gotten me to go to college, but...
Why didn't you want to go?
I didn't like school. I'm dyslexic. As I got further along in school, reading was... I didn't really like reading.
Studying the law, you must... How did you do it?
I listened well. I could learn almost everything I wanted just listening in class to my professors. I'm still not a great reader, but I mean, I didn't read at all until I was in third grade. Uh-huh. Nothing. The most important thing is to understand that it is an input problem. It's not a processing problem. It is an ability to absorb information. It's not how well you think. I mean, there's no negative correlation between dyslexia and intelligence.
Right, but all those facts that you have to gather in order to make a case, all the research you have to do.
And I do have to do some reading, but as I say, I listen really well. I think it has taught me to organize my thoughts, to simplify things, seek out the things that are important, because you can't read everything.
Right.
That's
breathtaking.
All of those.
It really is. I bet you can't imagine it, right?
I'm not hardwired that way. But I don't have his processing power. But it's fun to live with.
So, where are you on the jealousy meter? I'm Sicilian. I'm very jealous.
David has friends who are women. And they are friends. And I was jealous for a while, but then I put that away.
How did you deal with it at the time?
I said, you know what? If he wanted to be with him, he'd be with him. He's left two wives.
Right.
He knows how to do it. He doesn't want to be here. He'll just go off. So why am I thinking about this?
I think like a lawyer.
I figured we often had his former wives or one of them come on vacations
with us.
Because they're... grandchildren and children
were
there. And he asked me once, do you mind if Carol comes on the Christmas trip? I thought, his first wife. And I thought, why would I mind? Because her four children, who were still growing up, and then grandchildren were on those trips, and you're spending a week in the Caribbean, how can I say grandmother can't be there? So I said to myself, if he wanted to be with her, he would be with her. So, bring her on.
Yeah, right.
And I really meant that.
Yeah.
And it's been good. And it's good for the children.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
But I'm not jealous of them at all. His second wife is a friend of mine. Yeah. Like when I met her, I sort of gasped and thought, that's me 10 years older. That's how this works. Well, okay. It'll be fun while it lasts. Turns out it did last.
One of the things I think that we've learned from a lot of these couples is that people change things about themselves in order to accommodate another person.
For example, she wanted to tear down my house. That seemed to me at the time to be a really bad idea because I thought it was a perfectly good house.
A ranch-style, hideous pile of rubbish.
It was a nicer house than I'd ever lived in my life until then, and I thought it was perfectly good. Now, I eventually understood that building another house was more important to her than keeping the house that we had was to me. And once I understood that, I was perfectly happy to tear down the house and build a new one. And as in so many things, she was right, because this is a much nicer house. And I'm much happier here than I would have been if we hadn't torn down the house and built this one.
But you were able to not make that a power struggle and just say, okay, this means more to her than it does to me.
And also, you know, there are lots of things that I don't do so well and a lot of things that I don't know so well that she knows better than I do and does better than I do. Each of us is very conscious of if there's something that's more important to the other than it is to us, that we just decide to do it the way the other one wants to. For example, one of the things that I did before we were married was I would go to Las Vegas. often. And when we got married, Mary despised Las Vegas.
I do too.
The first time we went, she pointed out that most of the men there were wearing more jewelry than she was. There was almost nothing there that she really liked. But, and then she realized that I enjoyed going there and...
You like to gamble?
And I like to gamble, and I like the shows, and I liked the ambiance. And not grudgingly, when you do something for somebody, don't do it grudgingly. Don't make them feel that you're doing them a favor.
Right.
And she has sort of embraced going to Las Vegas. And I think, although she may tell you differently when when the microphones are off and you're private, but I think she actually enjoys going there.
Now. How often do you go?
Probably 3-4 times a year.
Wow.
To Vegas?
To Vegas.
See, what I did
I used to go 6 times a year.
Wow.
I used to go every other month. But now about 3 or 4 times.
And I lost $20 once. And I was depressed for a month. I didn't have $20 worth of fun.
Yeah, right.
Of course, this was back when I didn't have a job. Yeah, right.
Well, what about you, though?
Well, here's what I did. I figured out, okay, I thought he was so intelligent. But here we are going to Las Vegas. Now, he never went crazy. You know, he never lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, he never gambled the house.
Yeah.
And I decided, all right, he likes to do this. I don't. We do stuff I like to do that he doesn't like to do. So we'll even it out. And I said, what can I do there that I like? I like to hit tennis balls. So we would go there, and I would hire the pro, and I'd spend the afternoon on the tennis court.
Okay.
And I was perfectly happy.
Yeah.
And I just decided he likes to do this. We do stuff I like to do that he doesn't. And so I'll find a niche.
Yeah.
And I did.
I'll find
now
a way.
Now it's fun to go.
And the shows are good. That's
the shows
one
are
good.
Great. I think the shows are great.
I can never stay up
the
that
The shows
late.
Are really good.
Yeah, right.
And so what are some of the things that he does for you that he doesn't like to do what you like to do?
I might be wrong about this, but when we first started taking bike trips as a vacation, right? A vacation, you're grinding your way up a
How about
mountain
Hotel DeCap,
on a bike.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my idea.
Our first bike trip was 29 years ago, and we've been doing them ever since.
Really?
We do 2 or 3 a year.
Wow.
And it's perfectly clear that he does that. I think it's like me in Las Vegas.
I think you kind of like it. I have come to sort of like it. But in the beginning, the idea of, you get it, these bike trips, you go for a week and you travel like 40, 50, sometimes 60 miles a day.
Oh my God.
And
get up early.
And A, I don't like to get up early. B, I don't really dislike exercise, but not a high priority for me.
I'm just fascinated that you do these bike trips. Really.
And one of the nice things is that we're together the entire day, nothing else happening. You know, we can just ride together, talk, and it's very peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Yeah.
There came a time when I said to you, whatever you want to do, I want to do.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, right, yeah, right.
And
yeah.
I thought to myself, here you are. You're a lawyer, you're a feminist, and you're saying to this man, whatever you want. And I thought, good grief, it's come to this. But a lot of things changed. It wasn't a negotiation anymore. The next day he became a nicer person than he was. And it became an upward spiral.
I think that's
of
right.
Kindness and
respect.
And it changed everything.
And I remember feeling, well, actually, whatever you wanted, I want.
Right,
you know,
right.
No, because I really felt the same way.
We decided, I don't know, 10 years into our marriage, we'd been bickering about unimportant things. and we just decided, are we in or are we out?
Yeah, right.
Are we married or aren't we?
Yeah.
If we're married, let's make that a really good thing. And so when we disagree on stuff, I think he has an eye with what's really important here, a great loving marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So he's dead wrong on this issue. Who cares? I don't really. I don't have to win every argument.
Is one of you more likely to be the peacemaker? Or?
Oh, me, of course.
Are you?
No, I don't think either one of us.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I would not say
I
either.
I think we kind of trade around on that.
I wouldn't say either one of us. I think that we're both pretty good, as I say, at keeping things in context.
I'm married to someone who is not your typical great lawyer. He is off the charts.
Right.
I use that to my advantage. I don't resent that. You know, I learn stuff from him. I still argue. I respond. Mm. But you pretty much dazzle me with what you come up with. And I love it.
That's Mary and David Boies. I don't know how they could be more in tune with each other.
It was so moving to see how they share each other's joys and sorrows and passions. That's what marriage is all about.
Until next time, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas.
You know, I don't need to be right.
Yes, right. Yeah.
I can tell myself I'm right.
Double Date is a production of Pushkin Industries.
The show was created by us and produced by Sarah Lilly. Michael Bahari is associate producer. Musical adaptations of It Had to Be You by Stellwagen Symphonette.
Marlo and I are executive producers, along with Mia Lobel and Lital Molad from Pushkin.
Special thanks to Jacob Weisberg, Malcolm Gladwell, Heather Fain, John Schnars, Carly Migliori, Eric Sandler, Emily Rostek, Jason Gambrell, Paul Williams, and Bruce Kluger.
If you like our show, please remember to share, rate, and review. Thanks for listening.